See, when's the final? It's the 16th, our last day of class. When's the final, folks?
Yes, everyone.
It's Tuesday. We call you, ask you, when's the final? Tuesday. Say it loudly. When's the final?
Tuesday.
Right, Tuesday. So if you're not going to be here, contact me now. So it is May the 21st, and it actually starts at 8:10, but don't worry, I'll be here all morning long. If you get here at 8:35 or whatever. And so there are specific questions on all the chapters after exam number 4, which was the all the alternative investments and shorting, buying on margin, options and futures. But did I tell you where the questions are?
Yes.
Questions are on the website. So I give you the questions beforehand. I don't want you to concentrate on them. I want you to concentrate, especially if you still can't do the discounted cash flow model and the constant perpetual growth model. Some of you still contact me. Make sure you do the pre-final worksheet, which we passed out on Tuesday, and we should have a little bit of time at the end. For those of you, some of you are like, I don't want to do it again. That's okay. Just do it over and over and over again. So bring a calculator, Scantron, 2 pages of notes. I'll have the formula sheets and the present value tables. If you want to bring your own, that's fine. Gives you more room to put notes on. And is that it? Yeah. So any assignments, turn them in. Even if they're late, you get some kind of credit, right? All right, so today, at the end, you guys actually did, really, really well. What was the performance? We did really, really well. I mean, 14%. We were up 20%. Now, PG&E. Who wanted to short PG&E on Tuesday? It was last week. Because it was up to 9,000. Now, the report has come out. Yes, it was their transmission lines that actually started the fire. So, bad. Of course, don't blame. Do you blame the drug pusher for the drug addict's addiction? He doesn't understand what I mean. In other words, the people who have consumed the electricity and the gas, they want their electricity. They want their utilities. So who do you blame? Anyway, so I still think you guys did really, really well. All right, who's got a good joke? Kelly's not here. I've got a semester joke. This is actually a very useful joke for you. I want you to remember, especially if you go to university. Because at this university, there's a class with over 500 students. Right? 500 students. And you're going to see them, not in community college, but in university. And your entire grade is based on the paper that you turn in the last day of class by noon. You have to have it in by noon, or you fail. It's that simple, right? And so I don't have a pocket to put it in. So it's noon, the last day of class, and there are hundreds of papers on the professor's desk. And about 10, 15 minutes later, the student bursts in. I'm sorry, my car had a baby. My sister needed a new transmission. There was traffic. And the professor looked at him and said, sorry, young man, I cannot accept your paper. And the student said, but do you know who I am? And the professor said, I don't care if you're the son of the president of the college. I can't accept your paper. And he says, but do you know who I am? The professor says, young man, there are over 500 students in this class. I have no idea who you are. He says, good. He runs over to the desk, puts his paper in the middle, throws it up in the air, and runs out. Remember that. Remember that. Okay. So let's get started. You have a question. You have a question, and a lot of these, we're just going to run right through. But if you want to stop and we have time to discuss any of them, I have an answer. It might not always be right, but hey, didn't collect anything. How do you buy bonds? Who wants to answer that? It ain't easy. As we mentioned when we covered bonds, the vast majority of working grunts simply don't have the resources to build a well-diversified bond portfolio. Since bond brokers usually want you to pony up $25,000, $50,000 minimum for each bond. Therefore, most of us use bond mutual funds to invest in bonds. However, there's one major exception. Do you remember?
Treasury bond?
Treasury bond, the treasurydirect.gov. Go back to chapter 1, work through the treasurydirect.gov assignment. You, too, can buy government securities for the same prices as the big boys and girls on Wall Street. Where do you get a specific stock analysis info sheet? I think you called it a spreadsheet. Anybody? Okay, there are many stock analysis services that provide specific information sheets on stocks. We focused on the value line, which I believe is still the best. It is not cheap, $50 a month or $20 a month to get the cheap, there was 600 stocks. But the $50 a month is like 2,700. But you can get it for free at many libraries, right? And I think you're referring to the spreadsheet that we did. Is that what, is anybody referring to the spreadsheet? Want to take a look at the cash discounted cash flow spreadsheet? Well, you know, you want to see it? Okay. Well, it's on the website, and it just makes life a lot easier. You guys have learned how to use the manual present value tables. But get your laptop, and you don't have to do that. You just type it in. Okay, how do you open up a Roth IRA?
You better make an account, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's funny. It's easy. Just travel on down to your local bank, credit union, brokerage firm, forget the insurance companies. Say, I want to open up a Roth IRA. Or you could go online to any mutual fund company, financial institution, and you don't even need to leave your cozy little bedroom. Quit hurrying and waiting for your call. Now, the only thing left for you to decide is what goes in the Roth IRA. Remember, the Roth IRA is just a bucket. You remember this slide? The regular account, you can do anything, pretty much anything, and you pay taxes every year, no limit on contributions. The tax-qualified accounts, 401k, 403b, traditional IRA, Roth IRA, there are limitations on the contributions and the investment types, and if you put it in a Roth, that you do everything you're supposed to do, and then you get old as I am, you don't have to pay any taxes at all. Very cool. Okay, how do you use the taxable equivalent yield? You guys can answer it. I'll answer it. What's the taxable equivalent yield for?
Municipal and state bonds. I mean, federal bonds.
Right, in other words, we use the taxable equivalent yield to be able to compare the tax-exempt uni bonds with fully taxable corporate bonds. Now, as Carlos mentioned, the treasury bonds are taxable at the federal level, but they're not taxable at the state level. So there's a little bit of a cool advantage to them. We didn't do those calculations, but they're similar. While at first blush it may seem like that the corporate bond is paying us more, after we pay the taxes on the interest, it often is the case that we have more money in our pockets from the muni bond, especially if we're in a higher tax bracket. Do you think Wall Street works for all citizens in the USA? That's a pretty good question, huh? What do you think? Well, ain't nothing perfect in this here world, right? Capitalism included. The short answer to this question is yes, on balance. On balance, Wall Street, our euphemism for the capital markets, the basis for the capitalist system, works for all the citizens in the economy. Now, do the rewards get distributed equitably? Hell no. Never. However, sometimes they are distributed more equitably than others. At this point in our history, the United States of Armenia, any honest, reasonable evaluation of the distribution would have to admit that the rewards are not being distributed equitably. And this is what you're starting to hear some of the famous billionaires say. You ever hear of Ray Dalio? Ray Dalio? He's the head of the biggest hedge fund in the world, Bridgewater, something like that. My wife went to high school with him. Whatever. If you're a goofball, you can become the world's most famous hedge fund manager. And even he's coming out and saying, look, this is not working. We've got to do something. My fear is that the resulting current backlash will move us too far in the opposite direction and make all of us poorer. I like the way Warren Buffett says, you know, whatever her name is, AOC, they call her. She hasn't read The Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith. My hope is that we can move toward the middle and more equitably distribute the rewards to as many people as possible. The big question is how? It just ain't easy. How do we better share the pie without destroying the incentives to success that we have in our capitalist system. I got one good idea. Don't vote Republican anymore. It's because they just act like there's no problem. There's no problem. One of these Republicans a couple weeks ago said, nobody's having a hard time making the payments these days. The economy's doing great. And the guy probably believes it. He probably thinks that people are, everybody's hunky-dory. You know, well, his followers are, yeah, sure. They want more tax cuts for the rich. Some tips to increase concentration. Okay. Well, now this is a very interesting topic. In fact, I was just discussing this with a friend of mine, Drew A. Blank. We were commenting that these days people just can't seem to concentrate. Every 2 or 3 minutes we are reaching down to check our smartphones. And then we look up and we've forgotten what we were doing. And plus we get distracted by every little thing that comes along. And this happens even when we're driving. I mean, think about it. Every third person on the freeway is texting or putting on makeup or eating or watching porn. And they're supposed to be driving. I tell you, it's a disgrace. And you can't wait for driverless cars. You can do whatever you want while you're sitting in traffic. In fact, they're going to be like love motels. Driving around, people not getting it on. But what are we going to do with all the taxi drivers and Uber and Lyft drivers that will be out of a job? This is serious. I mean, there are reports that upwards of 40% of jobs will be replaced by robots and artificial intelligence in the next 15 years. What are we going to do with all the unemployed? I tell you, the world is in a terrible state of chaos. Wait a minute. What was the question?
Concentration.
Oh, concentration, right. You know, exercise, meditation. What?
Adderall.
Yeah, right. Strong pharmaceuticals. No, really. I'm a big fan of meditation. Getting away, turning off the phone, going out and sitting under a tree. I think it helps. Playing volleyball, beating the children. What?
Vitamin B.
Vitamin B. All the B's. You know, the Greeks had it figured out 2,500 years ago. When you went to school, you also exercised. Of course, they did it naked. They oiled themselves up. So, yeah. Interesting, right? How do you study productivity? Another very interesting question. Productivity describes the efficiency of any productive enterprise, whether it be how you as an individual do various day-to-day menial and important tasks, to how companies produce their wares for sale, to how an entire economy creates its gross domestic product. The goods and services that we need to keep ourselves alive. How to define and measure productivity encompasses a seemingly infinite variety of methods. A million years ago, I worked with statistical simulation models that were meant to improve efficiency within various systems. But that was a long time ago. And you know, don't let anybody tell you that don't worry about traffic if we add more cars. They say, you know, it's going to get a little worse, a little bit worse, it'll be wrong. What, when you model these systems, what happens, a road might be, you know, whatever it's called, level of service. The road might be able for this many cars, this, you know, this time period. And what happens is once you pass that, you add X amount of cars. It's not X amount of time. It's X to the third power. It's exponential. And that's why we have traffic jams. So that's what I did a long time ago. But I haven't done it in years. That was a long time ago. I do not know this. I do know this. If we simply turned off our phones during the day, we would be a hell of a lot more productive. I mean, it's ridiculous. Every 2 or 3 minutes, we are reaching down to check our smartphones. And then we look up and we've forgotten what we were doing. Wait a minute. Didn't we already answer this question? I'm confused. Now, how would you measure productivity? Well, it turns out it's not easy. You know, sometimes it's easier than others. Anybody, if you're interested, whoever asked this question, you can go into either economics, because they have efficiency models in economics, or physics and engineering. And those are different models. But either way, you want to learn as much statistics as possible. Yes? And Ephraim? Right, yeah, where you have to have the baseline. And then you got to get the baseline, and then you make the changes to it and see what happens. I'm sorry,
but.
Well, there you go. That's how you measure satisfaction, and that's a different measurement, right? That would be a measure of are we happy with the system that we have? And it turns out, you know, we talked about this in the 121 class. we're so productive. We're over consumption. We over consume. We eat too much food. We have too many things in our house. But happiness, how do you measure happiness? Well, it's a quotient. It's equal to what you have over what you want. Right? If you have everything you want, then you're full. We in the West try to maximize the numerator. We try to have more and more and more and more. What's the problem with that? The more you have, the more you want. There's a whole lot more that you can have that you want than you could ever have. Yes. I disagree, sir. I disagree. No, the pie can get bigger. In the Eastern cultures, they minimize the denominator. They try to want less. Because we have a tendency in the West to equate heaven and nirvana, but they're two different things. You remember this? We talked about this in 121. Right? Heaven is the fulfillment of all desires. You have everything you want. A pair of wings and a harp, and everybody plays shuffleboard and party every day, choir practice. Whereas nirvana is the destruction of your wants. You just simply want less and less and less, and so finally you're no longer attached to your life. So death is not that big a deal, because who cares? It's a different way of thinking. Okay, if you invest a dollar of my money on options, I just lose a dollar. How can I lose $1,000 or more? That's the article we took a look at? Let's take a look at it again. Well, actually, let's answer the question first. Well, you're correct. If you're the buyer of the options contract, you can only lose the option premium. That's the fancy word for how much you paid for it, the price of the option. But if you're the seller, the writer, the maker, then your loss can be enormous. Let's say you sold an option to buy a stock at 20. So remember, there's an option. There's two people. There's a person who's buying the option. They want the price to go up. And the person who sells the option, now maybe they get a dollar. That's it. They only get a dollar times 100, because it's always 100 shares every contract. Right. What happens if the price goes up to 120 overnight? Does this happen ever? It's rare, but it happens. That happens, not always. And so what happened now? If you sold a covered call, which means you had the 100 shares, well, now you just lost the opportunity to sell the shares at 120. So you give the shares to the person who said, I'll give you $20 a share. Oh, well, you lost that difference. But if you were naked, if you were uncovered, then you have to go out and buy 100 shares at 120 and sell them at 20. Yeah, you see, you just lost $10,000. You understand how that works? If you don't do it. In the case of the article that we reviewed in class, the speculator trader simultaneously bought and sold 500 call and put options with a strike price of 15, and sold and bought 500 call and put options with a strike price of 10. So he was both the buyer and the seller. It's called a spread. I don't know why, but it's a spread. So he means he might have to buy or sell 50,000 shares at $100, you know, 500 contracts times 100 shares per contract. Can you see what could happen to him? See what can happen to him? And that's exactly what happened. He put up $5,000 to get into this position, thinking that if everything went well by the end of, you know, however many, I think it was like 2 or 3 years that he had long options, and I don't know if they're called leaps, that he'd be fine, he'd make a lot of money. But it turns out somebody on the other side, the buyer, called in the shares. And so he had to buy those shares, and he didn't have the money, and so Robin Hood freaked out. Robinhood then sold, closed out the contract, closed out the other contracts. He's $50,000 in the hole. They close the account and say, "Give us $50,000." You see what happens? Robinhood should never have allowed that trade. Or if they did, he should have had $100,000 sitting in the account, just as backup, so that if something goes wrong, he could make good on it. But obviously, Robinhood, they don't know what they're doing. Anyway, I'm sorry. If most people lose their money on options, who makes money? The person on the other side of the trade, right? There's two people. There's the buyer and the seller. Someone wins, someone loses. Options are a zero-sum game. Of course, the brokerage firm is the house, right? They make money on commissions no matter what. Options are not like stocks and bonds where everyone can win, the economic pie gets bigger, our wealth increases. Options are gambling, they're pure speculation. Good luck, I hate them. What is the best way to compare, calculate mutual funds based on the returns and fees? Any ideas? Long-term, yeah, look at long-term net of the fees. Fees are important, but performance over the long-term. The problem is, it's not easy. There's no really one good answer. There are just so many choices, like $11,000. I like to focus on the advice from many years ago from Forbes magazine. Forbes says, choose a family, not a fund. So the idea is to find good companies that have very good funds, most all of which have done well in good times and bad times. They've beaten their respective indices, mutual fund categories, over decades. There's not that many. Yes?
So you said that mutual fund
companies? Yeah, like Fidelity, Vanguard, American, T. Rowe Price, Dodge and Cox, Franklin Templeton, Oppenheimer.
The way that you described it more was that companies have multitude of funds.
Yeah, how many is Fidelity have? Like a bunch. I'm thinking, five hundred.
Is a family not a specific type of?
No, they have different types of funds in the family. Okay, let's go look. Go to the website. I put six of them there. Come on, sweetheart. Go to the website. In chapter four. Here are six different families. There are many others. But here, four of which I think are awesome, too. I think, all right. Vanguard by the largest, and they made their reputation on index funds. Although they have actively managed funds.
Family means company.
Yeah. But each fund is its own company, its own investment company. It's an individual corporation. It's a little tricky because every fund is a corporation. It has a board of directors, and then the family exists within the funds exist within the family. Okay? It's actually ungangsterous. They're highly regulated. It goes back to the Investment Company Act of 1940, which was really well written. Back in the day when Republicans and Democrats actually liked one another. And it's been a good industry. It's the nation's largest financial intermediary. In other words, they hold more money than anybody else. So here are just six, and there are dozens more. Okay, so check these things out. I won't tell you who my favorite is. Okay. Personally, I prefer companies that have held up well during market downturns. Do you remember the upside-downside capture ratios? I look at the downside capture ratio. Don't tell me how well you did when the markets were zooming higher. Show me how well you did when the organic matter hit the ventilating device. Because you know it's going to happen, right? You don't know when. I also prefer companies that use a multiple management team, multiple managers, sometimes they call them portfolio counselors. Not a committee. Now, you don't want a committee, then you have death by committee. Everybody has to agree. No. The multiple manager system, they all work as a team, but they make their own decisions. So So one person might be buying Microsoft, the other person could be selling Microsoft. And that's okay. They want that. In fact, that makes it easier. Why? Because they can sell it internally. They don't have to go out and sell the shares on the marketplace. They can have one manager sell them to the other manager. See that? Avoids transaction costs and commissions and doesn't generate capital gains. Does that make any sense? They sell it internally. I'm afraid of the smart manager approach because what happens when the guy or gal leaves? Have you seen Fidelity Contra Fund? The guy's brilliant, Will Danoff. Go just look him up. Go watch some interviews with the guy. He's really sharp. He's run the Fidelity Contra Fund since 1992. I love listening to him. But he ain't going to be there forever. And what's going to happen when he leaves? What is Fidelity going to do? Probably people are going to jettison the fund out of their portfolios, which makes it hard to manage then, whoever takes over. So when you have a multiple portfolio counselors, multiple managers, one person leaves, somebody else coming up, right? They always have people coming in, coming out. So it helps continuity, if that makes any sense. Okay, do you think stop apps like Robinhood are trustworthy? Now, what is this one? Is that a sad face?
A happy face
with a...
Is
it a frown? I don't think it's a frown. Or is it like, I think, maybe it's supposed to be like this. Is that what it's supposed to be?
Yeah.
Is that it? Okay.
I just use a capital B for that.
Capital B? I don't know. Well, as you saw from the Legend of Irony Man, that was the guy who did the Robin Hood trade with 500 contracts to buy and sell, 500 pounds, yeah. Robinhood is still pretty new to this and not too swift at detecting potential landmines in their clients' accounts. If that guy doesn't give the $50,000 to Robinhood, Robinhood's got to make good on it. Right? They've got to deal with it. They're on the hook. And you might say, well, can Robinhood really do that? Yeah. In that broker's client agreement that you clicked on, that you read, it says, if your account goes, something like this happens, we can sell your shares or whatever contracts without asking you. So actually, they made a really stupid mistake letting this guy do this with only $5,000. If you're simply going to buy long a few shares at a time, then I think you'll be fine with them. And remember that while it is very low cost and it isn't free and whatever that is, you're good. Comments? Who uses Robinhood? You're happy with it?
Yeah.
And you're not doing anything like this guy, right?
No, I don't buy on margin or anything.
You're not buying on margin. You're not doing contracts.
But they are very generous with their margins.
They are?
Yeah.
What do they want you?
Before, I think it was like generic for everyone. You could get up to like 35 grand. I'm pretty sure they shut that down after Irony Man.
Yeah! So that's how he did it.
Yeah, he basically got a free $35,000 startup for his box spreads.
Are the free investing apps websites worth using for small, affordable investing? Again, yes, I would agree that as long as you aren't doing anything exotic and extremely risky, and I'm guessing you'll be do fine with them. In the case of Irony Man, our brokerage firm would have either refused the trade. I know I would have. If it were my client, I would say, look, you need another broker. I'm the wrong guy for you. I'm going to do my best to dissuade you from doing this. You're still going to do it. I'm going to talk to my boss because I don't want it. Or we would have required them. I don't know. Our back office folks, they're pretty picky. They would have required them to have access to a few $100,000 just in case of the unfortunate scenario that unfolded. And so obviously Robinhood is learning. They're brand new. If I have a financial advisor already, say, with Berkshire Hathaway or Edward Jones, do I really need to use Robinhood or Acorns? Well, I think you're a bit confused because Berkshire Hathaway has a real estate brokerage firm, doesn't have a securities brokerage. Anybody? Do they? I looked it up. I didn't think they did. They don't have one. Okay. But Edward Jones is a long-term discount broker that offers personalized services They call them sometimes mom and pop shops. There's usually one or two brokers there. Of course, you're going to pay more than if you choose a deep discount brokerage firm, but you're getting personalized service. You get to bounce your ideas or ask for the recommendations. So if you believe that you don't need investment advice and you can pick and choose your own individual stocks, why not use the most low-cost service you can find and trust? Oh, there he is. Of course, if you believe that you do need help, then a trusted and professional financial advisor can be worth the cost. Get a good referral. You know, ask to talk to previous clients. Look them up on BrokerCheck, FINRA. Personally, I don't believe the need for prudent, long-term oriented financial advice is going to end. The financial media, on the other hand, you know, whatever that guy is, Cramer and all these other people, TV or anything, they don't agree with me. They believe all you have to do is keep beating the drum for low-cost index funds, and that will allow individuals to bypass an advisor and do it all themselves until the next major bear market individuals panic and pull out their money out of their index funds at the worst possible time, and the public decides never again trust those crooks on Wall Street along with the stupid talking heads on television until the next major bull market and some other investment becomes the can't-lose, fail-safe, superlative, perfect investment, and you don't need a financial advisor anymore because everyone else is doing it. And, well, I hope you get my point. As Warren Buffett says, investing is simple, but it ain't easy. There even is some research that shows that investors who have a financial advisor have better results than those who do it alone. Why? Well, it's very simple. You got this, right? The vast majority panic when the organic matter hits the ventilating device. A financial advisor can help you when you are thinking about pulling out and waiting until it is a better time to invest. I cannot believe it. People, they use that saying, and they don't think about what they're saying. Right? I want to wait until it's a better time to invest. They want to wait until it goes up 100%. Okay, now it's a good time to... Wrong! Yeah, if you wait, you don't know when it's going to finish, but when it's down, you want to buy. Okay, I call it the toss them off the ledge. Okay, you have to remind them that we've been here before and assure them that assuming the world doesn't end, we will survive and come back, and history tells us that now is actually the best time to invest. But emotions get in the way. Common thoughts? Are you feeling it yourself? You're gonna feel it, folks. You're gonna say, I can't do this anymore. I've lost $400. I've lost $4,000. I've lost $40,000.
You'll lose it to yourself.
Well, it depends. If it keeps going down and down and down, you're like, oh, I gotta wait for it to come back. Indeed. But remember, you're gonna make some mistakes. There's gonna be some mistakes. Especially if you buy individual. But if you've got a good long-term mutual fund and have to change management or something like that, no. Should an investor invest only with a fee-only advisor or an advisor that gets a commission for selling products? I left it in the office, of course. You will read or hear some of the talking heads say, you should only use a fee-only advisor. That way there is no conflict of interest. Well, there's some truth to that because some of these places, they tell you, if you're the broker, they tell you what to sell your clients. You don't, you just say, this is what we're selling. Like, I couldn't, Merrill Stench, Morgan Stupid, I couldn't stand that. I would drop that place immediately. However, a commission-based advisor does not automatically mean the advisor has a conflict of interest, especially if the commission-based advisor eats their own cooking. Have you heard that saying? You're going to hear it in the industry. Somebody eats their own cooking, that means they invest in what they're selling, which is the industry saying that they invest in the same types of investment they are recommending to their clients, like yours truly. Some fee-based advisors charge outrageous sums of money to recommend products that any person new to the industry would quickly learn about themselves. I left it in my office. One of my students came up to me and said, you see these two books? And then she didn't bring me the DVD. We paid $3,000 for a couple of few hours of instruction on these things. The only. So, yeah, she got screwed. Then she took Business 123. Okay, does it matter what platform brokerage you use for retirement account? Vanguard, Fidelity. Okay, we need to ask ourselves, who do you trust? I believe this is far more important than how much fees are we being charged. Although, but fees are important, folks. You don't want to get raped, certainly. But there is so much competition for investment services that if you get a good referral, do your research, find someone, you will be happy with. You should be able to do that. Anybody want to recommend anybody? Anybody use Schwab? No, anybody use Schwab? I like Schwab, even their competitor. I don't know about these problems. Would you consider investing in the stock market gambling, considering we don't have much control over how the market will go? You guys aren't very talkative today. Is it because I'm not wearing something? It is the stock market gambling.
Individual stocks are something.
They can be. Right. It is gambling if you make it gambling. Okay? That's trading, speculating. That's gambling, in my humble opinion. Now, there's some, you might say, you know, you're tilting me in at odds because I look at this chart, it tells me, bull. It's investing if you make it investing. You are correct. We don't have much control over how markets will go. We don't know. I mean, the statistics say that in the short term it's random. However, if you have a long-term perspective, don't get too greedy when the markets zoom higher. Don't panic when the markets fall. And most importantly, invest in high-quality companies that have long track records of growing earnings and dividends. We love dividends, growing dividends. Then I firmly believe that you should not care one way or the other how the markets will go. In fact, you love it when the markets fall. Why?
Disco.
It's a disco. It's the best when the clients. When the market falls, when they start calling the clients, and they say, oh, I don't even look at it. If the world does end, of course, then all bets are off. I'll meet you at the beach. I'll bring the vodka. You bring the marshmallows. We'll get drunk and watch the world burn. Hopefully somebody will bring chocolate and we can have s'mores. Because if you really do believe the world's going to end, if, you know, the technologically based civilization is going to crack and fall apart, get out of the northern hemisphere. Get somewhere south. Maybe Tierra del Fuego, Tasmania. Learn to raise goats and grow sorghum.
Grow wheat, though. Wheat kind of hard to grow.
You know what's easy to grow, folks? It's good for your self-esteem. Radishes. Rabanos. They're so easy to grow. Man. They make you feel so good. Everything else they push. My tomatoes. They start out so good. You get all these flowers. All of a sudden the plant dies. What happened? It dies.
Yes. You ever heard of a plant die?
I had a turtle do that once. He disappeared. And then about 3 or 4 years later, I came out. He was right there, looking up at me. And I went back to get my son and my wife. And by the time we were back, he was hiding again. He was somewhere back there. Because every time he tried to get away, you know, we'd finally catch him. And he kind of look at me like, oh, I'm patient. I'll get away. Don't worry. Best starting price for a stock to buy that may rise.
Market price.
You might wait
5 years as a
key. That's right. You might die. I gotta wait for it to get cheaper. It keeps getting higher. Assuming that we're not talking about penny stock scams, right? The price is really not that important. What is more important is the type of stock and your belief about the future of the company. If you're buying a dividend paying blue chip company, what are the prospects for continued dividend growth? If you're buying a high PE growth stock, you know, speculative, what's the potential for continued growth? When are you going to pull the trigger? Because remember, these momentum, they look at the second derivative, not the first derivative. And you know what I'm talking about, take calculus. The first derivative is the rate of growth. The second derivative is the rate of the growth. how fast the growth is growing. And as soon as that slows down, then people pull the trigger. As we mentioned back in chapter 6 on stock valuation, after you've done all your numerical research, after you've read the annual report, all the articles you can, consulted ValueLine, any other investment services, and sit down and give yourself the 90-second story about the company. Have you read, how many people have read One Up on Wall Street yet? Yeah, read One Up on Wall Street. He would say, after, remember, this is before the internet, he had these 3-ring binders, and he would put all the articles he could and all the annual report and all that stuff in a 3-ring binder, and then he'd give himself the 90-second pitch. This is FedEx. I'm buying FedEx because I'm selling this company because. If you could buy the whole company, this is Warren Buffett, if you could buy the whole company, and you would, because you'd like to have that business for your own business. Obviously, you can't buy FedEx. I mean, $90 billion. But if you could buy the whole business, go ahead and buy 10 shares, right? And buy $500 worth of FedEx. Is it the best to buy multiple of the same stock or plenty of stock? Now, I'm not sure exactly if I'm answering this question right. But sure. But remember that diversification is a good thing. You don't really want to own just one company. Maybe there's a few companies you could, you know. But if you are convinced that this company is the best alternatives of all the companies you're researching, yeah, go ahead, buy more shares. But did I mention that diversification is a good thing?
Good.
I just want to make sure. Did I answer the question correctly? I'm not sure. Because same stock or plenty of stocks. Maybe this plenty of stock means multiple stocks, like diversify, is that what that means? Okay. Now, diversification is a good thing. How do you start investing when you only have $50 to invest with? Come on, who wants to answer this one? Because you're going to get this question from big friends.
Open up an IRA in an investment company and then start contributing $50 a month.
We got to use mutual fund. They won't know what investment company is. Okay, yeah, right. Most of us working grumps with $50 or $100 per month will focus on mutual funds. It's just so much easier than purchasing individual stocks. However, if you're motivated and patient, you can build a stock portfolio over time. Put $50 into your account each month, and then when you have about $500 or $600, buy a few shares of a company. Repeat this for the process for the long term. When you invest in a stock or bond, how do you receive the money? How do you receive the money?
Dividends.
Yeah, you got to sell, right? Exactly. What happens is the proceeds from your investments, if you sell, or dividends, or interest, are going to be put in your account as cash. Dividends from stocks, interest from bonds, proceeds from the sale of stocks and bonds will go directly into your account. And unless you state otherwise, mutual funds will by default reinvest back in the mutual fund. So they won't go into your account as cash. They'll just automatically buy more shares in the mutual fund. Plus, you can tell your brokers, most brokers will do this now, they'll allow you to set up a dividend reinvestment plan if you're selling a client. Okay, now you need the money, right? The cash is built up in your account, or you sell shares or bonds to build up cash. You call up your brokerage firm, they'll send you a check. Now you can set up direct deposit so that, boom, it does an electronic transfer to your bank. If you really need the money, they will wire it and charge you $20-$25, and your bank will charge you $20-$25. But it'll happen that day. So some people are, especially if it's a real estate transaction, they want the money that day. They don't want to have to deposit a check and wait at the bank, wait 3 or 4 or 5 days for the check to clear. Some brokerage firms have money management accounts, which are fancy schmancy accounts with their own checks. But they don't want you, maybe writing 1 or 2 checks a month. They don't want you writing checks to the grocery store. What is your stance on Forex trading? Are you here for the futures lecture? What do you think my answer is going to be? You don't know? I'm all for it. Go right, dude. Go ahead. No. Forex is a fancy word for the foreign currency exchanges. They are buying and selling futures contracts on currencies. I'm going to buy $50 million worth of pesos next year. What do we know about futures contracts? If you're in the world of international business, then these things are valuable tools to help you succeed. If you're speculating, poking your nose in this world, good luck, you're going to need it, because you could lose a lot of money really quickly. And when you filled out the client broker agreement, in there, even though you didn't read it, it says if your account starts losing money, they can stop you out. They can kick you out of the transaction, and you've lost. And they're allowed to do it, because they don't want you winding up like that guy with Robin Hood. They don't want you to lose $50,000 you don't have. Because then if you run away, they're stuck with the playing for it. Can I become a stockbroker without going to university? There's a couple of, I got confused. There was a couple of them was either 121 or 123. So if I'm doing it, it's supposed to be 121, my apologies. Can I become a stockbroker without going to university? Yeah. You don't need a four-year degree. Now, you're gonna want to get one eventually, but if you've started at this place and they like you, they're gonna help you get the four-year degree. The dirty little secret in our world is that there's no guarantee that someone coming from a prestigious university is going to do any better as somebody coming from a two-year college.
What four-year degree do they usually
ask? Well, it doesn't matter, really. A lot of people are liberal arts majors or some philosophy majors, journalism. One guy who took my classes on iTunes, and I don't know if you saw the, it's in Canvas. He was a journalism degree, and he wound up at a brokerage firm. He didn't know what the hell people were talking about. So he found my classes on iTunes, and he said, I finally now understand what you're talking about. I've gone through the first several lectures, and now I understand what the hell they're talking about. So it doesn't really matter, but certainly if this is what you want to do to begin with, sit down. Then you want to take business or finance, accounting. If you like accounting, go to Trump University. You don't have to be a scam artist. Yeah. No, it doesn't really matter. Yours is in nursing, right? No, they're going to love you. I'm serious. They're going to love you. Why? Because you know the healthcare field, right? You know how to stick people with needles. Who's making a lot of money out there in the healthcare field? Anybody got one? Okay. Now, if you are serious, I have some predictors to determine how people do. It doesn't mean you're not an extrovert. You can't do it. You can. But are you positive, optimistic? You have a sunny disposition. Do you like to socialize? Which is a fancy word used in network. No, you don't have to be really good at math. Did we do any math in here?
Yes.
No. What was arithmetic?
Ridiculous.
Really? Seriously? Then do it again. It's just arithmetic. Math? Oh, so am I. I'm a dyslexic author. But math is when the numbers disappear and we replace them with theta and x and y and a and b. That's math. This is arithmetic. You just plug in the numbers and do it. You've got to do it enough times. Do you balance your checkbook? Not really. Well, you ought to learn how to do that, too. Take business 121. Do you like to network? Do you want to help people succeed? Are you not afraid to ask someone if they need your help? If they say no, are you still willing to go to the next person and ask the same question? And then go on and ask 27 more people. You gotta be comfortable with rejection. Because people go, he rejected me. No blood. It's tough. Some people hate it. They absolutely hate it. But fine, If you're a go-getter who refuses to give up, well, you never give up. If you can answer the question to most all of these, especially the part about never giving up, there is a position for you. Now, if you really can't take the rejection, you'll find a place. You'll find a place in the industry. The financial services industry is huge. I mean, think about banking, insurance, real estate transactions, and of course the brokerage, mutual funds, and all that stuff. There's a place for you in the industry. They need more women. They need bilingual. They want more minorities. They love ex-military. And to be mentioned, salaries in the industry are higher than the national averages. Now, see, I used to tell people, don't bother getting a degree here, because you had to take math 5, 10, 15, 20, 22, 25, 30, 32, 35, 45, and then eventually 65. And it took people 7, 8 years to get the math. It was stupid. All you need is business math. You take business 183, learn how to plug in numbers into a formula, and that's all you need. That's not math. That's just plugging in the numbers. And remember, the programs are going to be done for you, usually. You don't have to do your own programs. So if you get big, and you play with a spreadsheet. Have a friend ever play with a spreadsheet?
Sure.
Play with a spreadsheet. That's enough math. That's not even math. It's arithmetic. So think about it. And so now we're required to get people to go get their certificate. I apologize. When I told that to one of the powers that be, they were horrified. I told them, I said, it's stupid. It's absolutely stupid. Remember, I'm a math major. That was my undergraduate degree. I know that you're not going to go out there and do calculus. Most people are not. Maybe you could become an engineer or something like that. If you're in the medical field, mostly it's algebra, right?
You don't even do math.
You don't even do it in the medical field anymore. It's all done for you. You just type it into the computer and boom, it spits it out.
Yeah, that was one of my funniest moments in a math class, was when the teacher was trying to explain to everybody why they need algebra and all this stuff for construction. And having done construction, I was like, no, that's not true. No.
And what did he say?
He was like, well, you have to know how to, like, no.
No.
You just show up and bang a hammer and work.
See, again, you know, when you're in this little world of mathematics, you think everybody is in the world of mathematics. Most of the math teachers have never worked a day in their life in anything else but mathematics. So they assume everybody needs it. But it's a total lie. I mean, obviously, if you're an engineer, physicist, if you're going to be researching the math in the health field, yeah, you're going to have to do it. But most people don't. Do you ever think about if or how the industry fuels capitalism and its negative aspects? Indeed, I do. And not only because I'm a bleeding heart, fuzzy head, a liberal. If we do not find a way to better share the economic pie, then we will continue to see the rise of demagogues like Pien J. Trump, whatever her name. You know, I really admire her, but she throws bombs at people. What's her name? AOC? She's young. Ocasio-Cortez or something like that. And she's brilliant, but she's not stupid. You know, she's playing on people's economic, you know, fears. And we'll see. I think that Green New Deal, I think it's just something to talk about, like make America white again. We're going to continue to see the rise of demagogues who will demonize the negative aspects of capitalism. If they are successful, then we're all going to be poorer, and I'm going to lose a ton of money. Anybody got any good ideas? How do we move towards the middle? I don't know. Because the Republicans have gone way out here, and they're pushing for the 0.1%, not even the 1%. They're jonesing for the 0.1%. They're working for the 0.1%. And now the Democrats on the other side are moving far towards, they're using the word socialism as if it were some kind of badge of honor. Now, there's some socialism is just a tool like capitalism, and some things make sense. I mean, do we really want to have competition for your police departments? Like, do you want to have private police departments that you have to, or fire departments or water authorities? No, there's some things that make sense. They should be socialized, but now that word is demonized, so now they're trying to resurrect it as a I don't like politics. What is politics? Poly means many, and takes some blood sucking and sex. What is the worst thing in today's school system, in your opinion, and how would you fix it if you could? The hardest part of my job is finding the best way to motivate students. There are some techniques that have been shown to better involve students. I use some of them, but I could use more They go under the umbrella of student-centered learning. Get the students to do things. Get them to do. That's why we have all these assignments. You know, I don't want you to write a paper, but I do want you to do the things that investors do. We should be encouraging teachers to use these techniques by all possible means. Having said that, I do believe much of the problem has nothing to do with the schools themselves and much to do with the inequality that we've already discussed. Here at Southwestern, we have students who are way overextended, food insecure, housing insecure, which is a fancy way of saying, you know, they're close to living on the streets. Many must work two jobs just to survive, take care of the kids because the spouse is a jerk, and we want you to show up on class on time. See, so how's the school going to fix that? There's now talk in the capital of having the school, the community college districts, allow students to sleep in their cars in the parking lots. Have you seen that? Just in the news a couple of days ago. No, if you tried to do it,
you're talking about overnight.
Overnight, yeah. You can throw it a day, yeah. You can sleep in your car, but I'm saying overnight. Because some of them sleep in their cars on the streets. So at least it'll be a safe place. And the community college said, wait a minute! Then we got to have bathrooms. We, you know,
get raped.
We probably have to have security. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know what to do. I think much of the inequality would go away if we forced all the folks in the investment industry to teach financial planning and money management or introduction to investment at their local community college. So every single hedge fund manager, every mutual fund manager, every bank executive has to teach this class. What do you think? I don't know. Forget that idea. How do I get rich?
That's why we all took the class.
Well, there are many avenues to building substantial wealth, especially if you're young. Who wants to give our intrepid, nascent investors some good, long-term-oriented, prudent advice?
Marry rich.
Marry rich, yeah. That can be the most costliest way. Unless he divorces ass, right? Okay, here's my advice. Start contributing $50 or $100, whatever you can afford, into a long-term oriented global stock growth and income mutual fund, preferably in a Roth IRA. Every year, increase your contributions 10 or more. As your investments grow, diversify your choices. As you approach retirement, begin to slide down the risk versus return spectrum, balance funds, bond funds. If the world does not end, you'll be pulling $3,000 or $4,000 per month for the rest of your life. And if it sounds too complicated for you, what about this? In the 121 class, and when we go to the high schools, we give financial planning seminars. We discuss goal setting. The students have already had some experience writing goals, and then we show them this slide. Let my cell phone make me rich. So you all got a cell phone, right? Y'all pay AT&T, T-Mobile, or Sprint, or Metro, or whatever. Every dime you pay them, put into a mutual fund. Can you handle that? Do that for 40 years, you'll be wealthy. What is the most interesting foreign investment, in your opinion? Well, you know, it's difficult, but not impossible to buy and sell foreign securities. Most of us are going to use a global or international mutual fund. In my humble opinion, though, the most interesting attractive foreign investment now is commercial real estate. It is still affordable, unlike in the U.S. where you can't even touch it. The dollar is very strong, so you're buying foreign assets with strong dollars, and most countries now have much stronger legal structures where they don't pull the rug out from under you. Mexico, you know, you see, there are people who lost their, they do it to each other, too, the Mexicans, just because you're Mexican citizens, doesn't guarantee. But now the legal framework is a lot stronger. You won't get your title insurance, you won't lose your property. Do you honestly think, now this is from a previous year, because I love this one. I keep this one, I show it to everybody. Do you honestly think stocks give a better return on investment than real estate? What about the fact that stocks are not tangible and real estate is? How do you feel about that? Well, you know, my friend, Harry Bitterci, you know Harry Bitterci, was having the same conversation with his wife. They were both worried that stocks really did not represent anything that was real. He and his wife told themselves that they would sleep on it and then discuss it the next morning. The next morning, gotta help me on this now. The next morning, Harry arose early and washed his hair with shampoo made by and washed his body with soap in the shower using water that was heated by natural gas supplied by WGD. He then shaved using a razor. He put on his clothes that he bought from and then had a bowl of from. He then remembered he needed to stop for gas on his way to work. So Harry got in his and stopped at the station for gas. He then received a call on his new service by that he received from just yesterday. He was really proud of his new iPhone. His boss wanted him to stop at and buy coffee for the visiting engineers who had arrived this morning on a jet made by and were staying at the when he got to work, Harry fired up his and connected to the internet via his company's router with service from and sent his wife a message that he agreed with her and they should stop investing in stocks and put everything in real estate because stocks were so intangible. When she received the email on her isn't that what it's called? Air Earthland Fund? She was very pleased. You see, we're in this system. We see it every day, but it just doesn't make Nike shoes or FedEx. It doesn't feel to us even because it's all around us. Both stocks and real estate have been good investments for patient, prudent, long-term oriented investors. What I hope I've impressed upon you is that no investment is perfect. Every investment has advantages. Every investment has disadvantages. Would you like that? When people say, "What are stocks anyway?" You say, "Are you wearing Nike shoes? You have the Samsung, the iPhone. Who's your cell phone provider? Do you have internet at home?" Mm-hmm. Okay, how are you? Fine, thanks. How about yourself? Be truthful. Actually, I've been very sad. The college is offering us old-timers a retirement incentive, and I'm taking it. I'm going to retire. I hate that word. I'm going to miss all my students. But the cool thing is I get to come back after a year and part-time. So I'm like a burr. I stick. So I'm fine. Thank you for asking. How did you get interested in the financial business? How did you become a stockbroker? Well, it's a bit of a long story. Many disparate things all came together. I started working for a small brokerage firm as a computer consultant. At the same time, I was teaching programming and computers here at Southwestern. I received an MBA and wanted to work more with business. Also, I started getting carpal tunnel. I needed to curtail my time in front of a computer. At the same time, I had invested with the same brokerage firm I was working with. The investments were doing well. I thought I would like to represent this company. The folks at the brokerage firm were very receptive to the idea and felt that I would do well. They sponsored me. I passed the Series 7 in the fall of 1998, 20 years. I then petitioned my dean to allow me to teach finance and investment. At first, my dean, he did not like the idea, but when the carpal tunnel started to become a serious problem, it was either that or I had to put me on disability. I missed teaching programming, but I really love teaching finance and investment. I consider myself a teacher first and stockbroker second. I love both, but teaching is my absolute passion. The fact that I get to teach what I love means I'm the luckiest guy in the world. Thank you for asking, by the way. Other than stockbroker, what other profession would you have? Because this is my problem. I want to do so many things. I was homeless, medical, a restaurant, a coffee shop, I was a woman's law critic, but you can't do everything. If you decided not to be a teacher, what would you have done instead of teaching? I never thought I was going to be a teacher. It was so bizarre. I was working at a program, a scientific program, doing statistics. Graphics, robotics. I was having a great time. I saw an advertisement for a temporary full-time programming instructor. I was single. I had a little apartment. I said, what the hell? It was one semester. What are they going to do, fire me? I don't know what the hell I was doing. I didn't think I was taking the job. He said, master's degree preferred, bachelor's degree, 2 years experience. Okay. I went to the interview never thinking I'd get the job. When I left, I thought, you know what, you might have gotten that job because I impressed the hell out of them. And I used this one word, eclectic. You know what it means, eclectic? I mean, eclectic.
Yeah, interesting.
All encompassing, yeah. You, 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 you open to many different things. And the one guy didn't know what the hell it means. And he kind of looked at the dean, who said, "Don't worry." Don't worry, he knows what he's talking about. And so I think I really impressed him. I got the job. And I was really scared. But within a few weeks, I made a lot of mistakes, but I just knew this is it. Position became permanent. That was spring 1983. Most of you weren't alive then. And we had prime computers. They're gone. They're fun computers, by the way. What was your first investment? This is a tough one. I guess the best answer would be going to college and getting a bachelor's degree in mathematics with a computer science minor. As we said at the beginning of the semester, education is often the best investment someone can make. If you're talking about my first securities investment, that was a dumb stock that I bought on the advice of someone who I now think was either an absolute idiot or he was an outright fraud. And I look back at it, why the hell would I listen to that guy? Is there anything you would have done differently? Well, sure, you know. I mean, obviously, looking back, you're going to make mistakes, folks. Don't beat yourself up. I would not have tried to hit the home run with those tiny little biotech companies. All of them went up, and then went down. But we're very blessed. I absolutely no complaints, everyone. What we've instilled upon you, I hope, is that you're going to stay away from these kind of things. Right? Maybe buy one or two, but for every one of those, buy five Johnson & Johnsons and Exxon Mobils and Microsofts. Right? Companies that are big, roots and deep in the economy. What's your favorite cut of steak? I don't know why you asked me this. I don't really like steak. I don't even know the different cuts. The only one I really know is filet mignon, and that's because it sounds so cool, filet mignon. I do like everything else. I mean, I love seafood, pulpo. Go down to TJ, and right downtown, Las Corrientes, oh, by 6th and Madero, oh, the pulpo, pulpo. Anyway, what is your favorite sport? I don't watch other people exercise. Full contact origami on them. My favorite exercise is cycling. But if I do have a favorite sport to watch, it's soccer. Because I love soccer because it doesn't stop. Right? Football, 3 seconds stop. 3 seconds stop. And it lasts over 3 hours. And it's about 12 minutes of playing. And people are like, so you can eat more potato chips and drink more beer. But soccer's always moving. I like that. But I don't watch it that much. What have you taught introduction to investments? What have you have taught introduction to investments at the university level? No. Well, I would have, but they won't have me. I don't have a PhD next to me, pile higher and deeper. Plus, I did not go to prestigious school. So look at the school I went to. On top of that, I teach from the perspective of the industry, not the academic world, and they really don't like that. The university is like, can't do everything, right? Have you ever won big on a volatile stock? Sure, all the time. They all went up. They all went down. Not all. The one that did really well was Qualcomm, but that was in the investment club I was in, and I remember I wasn't too keen on the idea. I was worried that Nokia, you ever hear that, was going to clobber them because there were two systems that were fighting. Remember Beta? You remember Betamax and VHS. Betamax was better. Sony's, but VHS won out in the marketplace. And that's what I was afraid of. Because CDMA is better than GSM, but I thought GSM was going to win. And it turned out that Verizon kept CDMA. And now Sprint uses CDMA, but AT&T and T-Mobile use GSM. So they both are alive.
It did kind of win in a global perspective.
Who, Qualcomm?
No, GSM.
GSM, really? I don't know.
CDMA is really only used here in the U.S. by Verizon. And actually, I think Sprint switched over to WiMAX. So they could do their 4G. It's like, yeah, because it's called Deliver Multiple Access. It's So I worked for AT&T and then Verizon for like 8 years. Globally, they use GSM technology. It's just SIM card-based. And even the LTE is all SIM card-based. So it's even Verizon's new LTE system is all piggybacking off of GSM technology. So,
oh!
Yeah, the old CDMA, that's why the old phones didn't have SIM cards in them. They had the built-in antennas and stuff, because the SIM is Subscriber Information Manager, and that communicates to the towers and then to the
So what? So how's Qualcomm making all this money outside the United States?
They sell processors.
Yeah, the processors. And, that's what they're making their money.
Yeah,
from?
And they do
Everyone
both.
Uses them.
They do
okay.
both.
Okay, cool.
Qualcomm makes all of that stuff.
How much money have you lost? Well, we must differentiate between realized and unrealized losses. In other words, when you invest in stocks, there will be times when you see your portfolio fall substantially. As long as you don't sell, it is not a realized loss. It is an unrealized loss. I don't even want to tell you how much some of the realized losses were. It ain't pretty. In the realm of realized losses, it's not been that much when you look at our overall investment portfolio. I have to go back and do some detailed records research to give you the exact number, because the truth is you try to forget your losses. You know, your mind is wired that way. But it's like less than 15 grand. As I said, we won't mention how much unrealized losses we had during the market downturns. By the way, I didn't tell my wife. Like in 2008, she goes, how are we doing? Oh, just fine. Okay. What was your most profitable investment? I think it was my education. I think that was my most profitable investment. But does anyone want to guess what the best stock I ever purchased was?
Philip Morris.
Philip Morris, right?
Nice.
And that was before it was called Altria. Right. Ironically, our biggest dollar gains have come from real estate. On that point, I can honestly say that I was a successful contrarian investor. My wife and I bought a few properties after the blood was running in the streets. She, when we first met, she didn't like stocks. She said, why don't we buy real estate? I said, it's too damn expensive. It's just too damn expensive. But that was not by design. I did not predict such a huge downturn. In fact, I didn't think it was going to be that bad. I thought about 20-25%, like 1992. But back in 2009, I looked around and Chula Vista was ground zero. I mean, 40, 50, 60% down. So I said, Nina, this is it. This is the time to invest in real estate. Are you sure you know what you're doing? No. So we did it. We did it, and I'm glad we did. But I ain't going to buy any more. Unless there's another downturn. Because I'll tell you, real estate, the PETA factor, way up here. Squeeze your renters. How did you meet your wife? You really want to know?
Yeah.
Thank you for asking. Okay. My friend Melanie is coming over to stay with me. She used to live in OB, but she moved because she had a good job up in Los Angeles. And we were platonic friends. We had no hanky-panky going on. But she missed San Diego, Ocean Beach, all so many times. So Friday evening, she fights the traffic to get down here, and she says, Frank, I'm starving. Let's go find something to eat. So I said, there's this new Thai place in Ocean Beach. And so let's go. So it was small, and inside, there was a guy smoking. This was a long time ago. And he was like a factory. The place was filled with smoke. So we go outside. There's two tables, one filled with people, the other one about six or seven seats. There's one little lady just sitting there looking like she does not want to be bothered. So I said, sorry, we'd like to eat here, but we can't go inside. Somebody's smoking. We won't bother you. We'll bother you. Okay. And so we got to talking. Give me a card. That's how it started. So we have a little tablet there. Not a tablet, a little tile. OB had these tiles you could buy. And so right there, it says, Frank and Anita met on this spot, the 29th of June, 1986.
No.
Yeah. Are you happily married? Yes. My wife told me to tell you that we are very happily married. Can you say that you have reached financial freedom? What are you going to do with all your investments after you retire? Well, by financial freedom, I'm assuming you mean that I don't have to work anymore. Oh, yes, we have reached financial freedom. We'll do dollar cost averaging in reverse. We've been putting money in now for 30 years, 40, 30, 60 and a half years. We'll now start taking it out. And we'll probably not go through it all, so we'll probably give a big chunk of change to maybe Southwest. What is your net worth? Well, not much, actually. We have a very old net. It really isn't worth much. We're planning to buy a new net, but it would be worth a whole lot more. Can't go butterfly hunting without a net. Can we bring a page of notes to the final exam?
Yes.
How about two pages of notes?
Yes.
Plus, you can bring your own formula sheet if you want to, but I'll have them. So,
front back,
two pages, handwritten. That's 4 pages, right. So we end as we started. It is a gloomy moment in history. Never has the future seemed so dark and incalculable. The United States is beset with racial, industrial, and commercial chaos, drifting we don't know where. Oh, our troubles, no one can see the end. When was it written? 1800s, 1847. So I want to give you a different perspective. It is a fortunate moment in history. Never has the future seemed so bright and promising, assuming we lived through Trump. The United States is the most racially diverse, industrially strong, and commercially prosperous nation in the history of the world. Of our continued success, no one can see the end. Who said this? Me. So, thank you all for such a great semester. Don't be a stranger. Come back. You know how to get in touch with me. Wonder Professor, Susan Solon. I'll be there. And I want to say how privileged and honored I am to have taught this class. This is my favorite class to teach, face-to-face. I hope all of you become the best investors the world has ever seen. Cool? Thank you so much. Now, you have 5 minutes. Please fill this out. And don't put your name on it. Put it right there. What did you like about the class? What did you not like? How could it be improved? And then any other comments, criticisms, suggestions? And then what are you going to remember? What are the 3 things? Right there. What are the 3 things, or just 1, or 4, or many, that you will remember from this class that you think are going to help you so much? I'll put that right there. And I don't look at these until after 2 or 3 weeks after the semester's over. I've already turned into grades. It's not going to help your grade. It's not going to hurt your grade, no matter what you say. Put your name on, it doesn't matter. They ain't going to look at it until all the grades are in. Okay, so, Andrea. Where's Aram? Okay, are you still here? Andrea? Make sure Aram's stuff's not in there. Yes.
Professor, can I send him my native paper later?
Yes. Whatever you have, turn it in.
Not right now.
Not right now. Turn it in on Tuesday.
Okay.
Can I get a copy of your son and stuff for one of the professors? But I lost my binder. I used it for a white balance when I was filming and
Set
it down and forgot to grab it.
Which ones do you need?
All of them.
All of them? Well, I don't know if I have all of them, but I have as many.
Yeah.
Okay, here's...
Do I leave all of these here?
Yes, are they all stapled together?
Yeah. Oh, no, not together.
Okay.
I'm going to knock out like 10 of them.
Okay, here's chapter 4.
Okay.
Chapter 4. Okay, right there.
Oh, yeah, it's LTE stands for
long-term evolution.
It was actually Verizon's thing. They were changing over from CDMA to GSM. And everybody else just kind of jumped on the bandwagon to use it for advertisement purposes.
So they don't use CDMA anymore?
Not anymore. That's what the LTE was about.
Oh,
yeah.
See, I haven't been keeping up with it.
Yeah.
Here's chapter 6. I'm out of chapter 1. But everything's on the website.
So I can get it off of the website.
Yeah, but here's chapter... I have extras. Here's chapter 8.
Okay.
And I think chapter 7. Here's chapter 7.
So I'm going to try to do like 10 of them over the week. And I figured that'll
here's
help
chapter
me...
Here's chapter 7.
I figured that'll help me be well-rounded for the plan.
Yeah, here's introduction to bonds. Here's the bond assignment, chapter 9.
I'd have that one, so
I have
the
that.
Ones.
You have 9?
I have the recent ones, yeah.
You have 10?
I still have that.
Here's chapter... Take anyway. Okay. Here are the bond formulas. Oh, dear. Okay, here's chapter 18. That's the easiest 5 points all semester long. Here's chapter 11. And then there's an optional one, but you got to start today for chapter 15. Yes.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
But everything's on the website.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
I need the equations for...
Oh, for chapter 6?
For 10.
For 10? Here, chapter 10.
And then I wanted to see if I'm missing anything else. I know I have my chapter 10, which is the...
Oh, I didn't pack up the spreadsheet.
Oh, is it this one?
No, that's 121.
Oh.
Where's 123 spreadsheet? Here it is. Here's the spreadsheet. Anybody wants to see it? I apologize. Okay. Oh, right there. Thank you.
How many items do you have for finals?
How many items?
For the finals.
You mean how many questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there'll be more than normal. But put it right there. Go online and look at the questions that are after chapter 8 and chapter 4. Okay? I think there's like 25 or something. And then there's another 50 of all semester long. And then the calculations are going to look just like the pre-finals.
Okay.
Okay? So,
for the chapter I turned in for...
Do you have them?
I have one of them.
Okay, pass them.
No, but you're the grader.
I know, but give it to me.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, excellent. I think I have something from you, John. Aram, are you still here? Okay, which one was it?
So I don't remember exactly. I think that the last question was one about like 0 coupons.
Oh, that's 10.
Yeah. So
okay. Okay. Nicholas still here? Okay, Nicholas here or no? Okay. 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 Thank you. Okay, got it. Here you go. Here you go. Yes, you turned in the bonus assignment for chapter 4.
Oh, so I don't have the actual...
The regular assignment I don't have. But you turned in the bonus assignment.
I'm just going to turn this off.